From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. On Super Tuesday, March 3rd, when voters in more than a dozen states, including California, vote in the primary elections, Los Angeles's voters will also be picking their city's district attorney. Incumbent Jackie Lacey, who has faced protests from Black Lives Matter Los Angeles over her refusal to charge police officers responsible for fatal shootings, is fighting for her political life. Lacey faces two challengers, George Gascon and Rachel Rossi, both of who say they are the progressive alternative to Lacey. My guest is Melina Abdullah, professor and chair of the Department of Pan-African Studies at California State University of Los Angeles. She is active with the LA chapter of Black Lives Matter and has been among the many protesters who has regularly demanded that Jackie Lacey resign. Welcome back to the program, Melina.
Thank you so much for having me, Sonali.
So the last time we had you on, we had talked about the ongoing protest that Lacey was facing. So here we are, just a couple of weeks out from this very, very important election, when it seems as though Lacey is facing a lot of momentum against her. But remind us, stepping back, for those who might not be familiar, for those of our audience that's outside Los Angeles, why Black Lives Matter has been regularly protesting Jackie Lacey, who happens to be the first Black woman in this position of DA.
Right. She's the first African-American and the first woman. So not just the first Black woman,
wow,
but
yeah,
the first to represent either of those. But we say, in the words of Zora Neale Hurston, all skin folk ain't kinfolk. So descriptive representation means very little when you're really betraying the community that you descriptively represent. Right. It's not authentic representation. And so it doesn't matter to us that Jackie Lacey is one of those happens to be Black people if she is not representing the collective interests of Black folks. And so we want to do exactly what you said, step back and say, how did we arrive at this? When Jackie Lacey was elected in 2012, you know, Black folks were really kind of excited about the prospect of electing a Black district attorney. And we're hopeful that Jackie Lacey, who does come from the Black community, would represent our collective interests. And so when Black Lives Matter was born a year after Lacey's initial election, we attempted to work with her. So we were very deliberate in showing up with Lacey differently than we were showing up with kind of the recognition of the adversarial positioning that we had with people like Charlie Beck, who is the police chief, right? And so we scheduled meetings with Jackie Lacey in 2014 and 2015. We met with Jackie Lacey and asked, what can we do to help get these officers who are killing our people prosecuted? And those meetings were cordial meetings. We had follow-up phone calls, we sent letters, we sent emails, and these were meetings that were in partnership with the families of those, some of the families of those who've been killed by police. What we witnessed is Jackie Lacey refusing to represent the community. So even though the meetings were cordial, she wasn't doing anything to bring justice for these families. And so we kind of upped the ante a bit, really at the urging of Keisha Michael's twin sister, Trisha Michael. Keisha Michael was killed along with her partner, Marquinton Sandlin, by Inglewood police as they were sleeping in their car. They left, when the Inglewood police killed them, they left seven children without parents. And so we were successful in getting those five Inglewood police officers fired from the Inglewood Police Department after about a year of protest at Inglewood City Council. And what Trisha Michael said is, we can't let it go at this. You know, those officers can easily get another job at some other police department. So we want them prosecuted. And so we issued a petition. More than 10,000 people, almost 11,000 people, signed that Color of Change petition in a span of less than a month. We went to deliver the petition, which was really imploring Jackie Lacey to prosecute killer cops. That was our hashtag at the time, prosecute killer cops. And when we went to deliver the petition, we thought, because it's a public office, it's a public building, it's a massive public building, and it's actually on the list of historic sites in downtown Los Angeles. They at one time did architectural tours of that building. At the time we were trying to deliver the petition, it was completely open to the public. We were met with force. LA County Sheriff physically pushed us back from the entrance of the building, and we weren't allowed entry or to meet with anybody on Jackie Lacey's staff. And so we gave them 24 hours to accept this petition. And, you know, basically she refused. And so it moved from kind of a imploring of her to prosecute killer cops to demonstrations every single week asking her to prosecute killer cops. And that was in October of 2017. We asked for a public meeting with her. She initially agreed to a public meeting in December 2017. And then the day after she agreed to it, she reneged on it. That was supposed to take place in January 2018. We held the meeting and invited her anyway. She said it was open on her calendar. She didn't show up. And so at that meeting, over 100 community residents overflowed from the public meeting room at Los Angeles Community Action Network, and we collectively agreed that we would shift our call from prosecute killer cops to Jackie Lacey must go. So that's the chant we've been delivering outside her office every single Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. We stand with the families of those who've been killed by police.
And we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of people.
Hundreds and hundreds of people who also are criminalized for our protest. We're constantly threatened with arrest for being on a public plaza and delivering a public call to a public official about what her job is. And so we protest every single week, and we have ally groups out there with us. White People for Black Lives, Central CSO, American Indian Movement, March and Rally, Ground Game, and lots of different organizations who are there with us saying that Jackie Lacey must go. Los Angeles Community Action Network is there every week as well.
So let's talk about the rivals that are challenging Lacey for her job. Lacey has refused to resign, so she could be ousted at the polls on March 3rd. Who are the two candidates facing her? They say they're the progressive alternative. And has Black Lives Matter Los Angeles taken a position or endorsed either of them?
So to be clear, George Gascon and Rachel Rossi are both worlds better than Jackie Lacey is. It's hard to be worse. To put it in context, 585 people have been killed by police in Los Angeles County since Jackie Lacey took office, and she is not prosecuting those officers. So it's hard to do worse than that. We've also issued, if folks go to blmla.org and click on current campaigns, you'll see that we've issued 7 deadly sins that Jackie Lacey is responsible for, including everything from sexual harassment in her office, where she rewards those who are accused of sexual harassment and transfers out, demotes, and sometimes sets folks up for resignation when they are those who are actually the victims of sexual harassment. So there's things like that. There is her refusal to prosecute Ed Buck. It's impossible to be worse than Jackie Lacey. So Black Lives Matter does not endorse political candidates. We're telling people on March 3rd to vote for either of the other two candidates. George Gascon or Rachel Rossi are both much better than Jackie Lacey, but we can't endorse and we don't endorse candidates. We're just saying Jackie Lacey must go, and this is the year to get rid of her.
If both the two alternatives to Jackie Lacey get equal numbers of votes or large numbers of votes, couldn't they split the vote, resulting in Lacey still getting more votes?
I'm so glad you asked that, because the political science nerd in me is coming out. So this is March 3rd is the primary election. And so the way it works in Los Angeles County is if no candidate gets 50% plus one vote, then it goes into a runoff. So you get to vote whatever your heart tells you to vote. You know, you don't have to vote for George Gascon because he's the one that's most likely to unseat Lacey. You can vote for Rachel Rossi because she's never been a prosecutor, right? She is a federal public defender. If you say, well, George Gascon has really led San Francisco in the decarceration of youth, and that's who you want to vote for, you can vote for him.
And that's he has his background in San Francisco, right?
Yes, he's a former DA of San Francisco. So on March 3rd, it doesn't matter which of Lacey's opponents you vote for one of them so that we can drive down her numbers. Our goal is to get her below 50%.
So it could very possibly be the two of them in a runoff, the two rivals in a runoff with one another at a runoff election then.
That's possible. It's unlikely, but it is possible. It is possible.
So the struggle that Black Lives Matter in Los Angeles has led against Jackie Lacey is one that seems to mirror some races and some other local struggles in other parts of the country where folks have realized that really to address the problem of over-incarceration, mass incarceration, the racist criminal justice system, racist arrests, and the killings of unarmed people of color in particular, one really needs to look at the position of the district attorney. How do you put the struggle in Los Angeles around Lacey's leadership as a DA compared to other places where there have been some quite successful fights to unseat a DA? San Francisco just has a new DA, Chesa Boudin, who's someone that is considered more progressive. We've seen Larry Krasner.
Yeah, so it's really important to understand the significance of Los Angeles. It's one of the largest locales in the country. The New York Times has called this race the second most important race in the country.
Wow.
So behind the presidential election. So it's the most important DA's race in the country. It will set the tone for the rest of the country. We know that although Chesa Boudin and Larry Krasner are imperfect, that they also have ushered in some really important changes already. We've seen the release of many of the Move 8 folks in Philadelphia. We've seen cleaning of house in Philadelphia. We've seen Chesa Boudin really engage fully with community. And then that's also sparked candidacies around the country. So if we think about how close we were to winning a progressive prosecutor in Queens, if we think about the candidacy of someone like an Adia Jones in Houston, who is a member of Democratic Socialists of America, right? I think that what you're seeing is a recognition that it's not just the presidency that matters, that if you don't have faith in any of the presidential candidates, we need you to remember that voting is still important because day to day, it's our local elections, especially the prosecutor's race, that affects our daily lives. So we want everyone to make sure that they pay close attention to who their DAs are, especially as we talk about abolitionism and rethinking what public safety means, that maybe public safety, and I won't say maybe, I'll say public safety is really should be grounded in decarceration work. You know, we're also pushing yes on Measure R so we can stop spending our dollars on the largest jail system in the world in Los Angeles County and instead spend those dollars on things like mental health resources, rehabilitation services, after school programs, prevention programs, though the kinds of things that actually make communities safe. And so as we look at DA's races, it's really a question for residents around and voters around what public safety means to us and for Black, brown, poor folks, especially we need to say, you know, prisons and police don't make our communities safer. It's really about providing the kinds of resources and services that our community needs. Back to Jackie Lacey very quickly, as we talk about things like mental health services, something that she touts as being a leader on, she often talks about her mental health program. When we look at the internal budget of the Los Angeles District Attorney's Office, Jackie Lacey actually spends more on office supplies than she does on her mental health unit.
Wow. She has also, in recent days, it was just a week ago, announced a major issue dismissing 66,000 marijuana convictions in Los Angeles County. And of course, marijuana convictions have disproportionately impacted people of color, in particular African Americans. What do you make of this move?
I mean, it's clearly a campaign strategy. So the Jackie Lacey was one of the last DAs in the state to comply with new state law, right, to expunge the records of those who've been convicted of marijuana possession. So her announcement that she's overturning the convictions of folks who were simply possessing marijuana, I liken it to, you know, an abuser, a domestic abuser, saying, yes, I've beaten you, and now I'm going to take you to the hospital. You don't get an applause for that, right? You are still an abuser.
And so she was just complying with state requirements.
Basically. Now, of course, she's going to tout it as she did more, but we need to remember that the other DAs in the state of California had already done something like what she's now touting as a progressive move. And we also need to remember that that is one of the deadly sins that we list on the flyer against Jackie Lacey. So we say that she aggressively prosecuted people for marijuana possession, and she refused to expunge those records. So she was really pressured into doing what she did, and now she's kind of touting it as, see, I'm progressive, when really she was pressured into that move.
So this particular race on March 3rd for the LA District Attorney's office, do you credit the wave of such races around the country and just greater scrutiny of what DAs are doing, what police departments are doing to Black Lives Matter? Because we really, you know, we've had these problems highlighted for years, but now newspapers are covering them. You mentioned Measure R, the LA Times endorsed Measure R, which is greater civilian accountability of the sheriff's office. And it seems as though there's been a cultural shift that one could credit Black Lives Matter for.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that what it underscores is that there is a role for activism. And so a lot of people say, you know, Black Lives Matter activists are not, we're not staff, right? I'm just a mom and an educator, right? We have folks who are retirees, we have school bus drivers, we have teachers, we have retail sales folks, right? We have people who are working temp jobs who are all out there on Wednesdays at 4 o'clock protesting Jackie Lacey. Sometimes they try to dissuade us. The world tries to dissuade us from doing this work. They say, why don't you just vote? We will vote. We will be voting on March 3rd, but we also know that change, especially transformative change, in this country and in the world, never happens just by voting, that there is a role for protest. We need protest and politics. And so, yes, I think that Black Lives Matter has been instrumental in this work. We know that Jackie Lacey ran unopposed in 2016. She now has two opponents, and she started with four opponents. We think that we've softened her up as a target so people know that they can run against her. We know that other organizations are kind of jumping on board. So you have groups like Color of Change, you have groups like Real Justice, you have the ACLU and other teams of folks who are saying, you know what, we need to start looking at district attorneys, and that is one of the spaces for change we really need to push forward
Are you happy with the discussions around criminal justice issues and criminal justice reform in the at the national level, for example, in the Democratic Party debates, candidate debates, or do you wish there was better discussion?
Oh, I think there's terrible discussion. I think that there is lip service. You have candidates like Pete Buttigieg hashtagging Black Lives Matter and calling Trayvon Martin's name when he did nothing when Eric Logan was murdered in South Bend while he was on the campaign trail, right? You have people like Mike Bloomberg saying that he is committed to police reform when we know the kind of reform that he ushered in as mayor of New York was stop and frisk laws, right? You have Joe Biden putting himself out front, even though his rhetoric is now failing, right? As the Democratic choice. He's making it seem like he's the automatic choice for the Democratic candidacy when he's one of the authors of the 94 crime bill that imprisons so many of our people. And so I think we need to challenge, constantly challenge, the Democratic contenders. So we in Black Lives Matter are hashtagging Black the Vote and What Matters 2020 and saying that they need to have a real criminal justice package that is developed in partnership with those of us who are doing work on the ground. It's not enough for them to deliver hashtags or say words that might make them feel good. We want them to have real packages and do work in partnership with those of us on the ground.
And finally, Emelina, you are a professor at Cal State Los Angeles. And right now, there's a piece of legislation in the California Assembly, AB 1460, that would mandate that all 23 Cal State University campuses require ethnic studies as part of the student requirement. You're backing this bill quite strongly. Tell me a little bit about it.
Sure, we are so excited about this bill, which is being introduced, which was introduced by Dr. Shirley Weber in the State Assembly. She's a former chair of Africana Studies at San Diego State, who's been one of our fearless leaders in Sacramento. And the origins of this bill are really go back 52 years. So when we think about the students who protested and shut down San Francisco State University for 134 days, demanding first Black studies and then ethnic studies, this is an honoring of their work. So for the last 52 years, we've been trying to beat back attempts by the institution to erode and undo the work that was done in 1968 and 1969. The university has refused to support us, and so we say it's time for governmental intervention. We're asking legislators to think about things like the Civil Rights Act of 1964, when states said, no, let us desegregate ourselves. It took courage to say, we're going to usher in a Civil Rights Act. We're asking legislators to do that now with AB 1460. We say make ethnic studies a requirement. The university system has had 52 years to do it and they've refused. And so now it's time for the government to take action. We know that when students take ethnic studies, their retention rates go up, their graduation rates go up, and this is particularly true for Black and Brown students who constitute the majority of the Cal State student body. It's especially true for Black students who are only 3.4% of the Cal State system,
Wow.
who we are failing. We are failing Black students. But ethnic studies is also good for white students. As we talk about a time when you're seeing hate crimes on the rise, when white students are being lured by white supremacist organizations and white supremacist politicians, it's important that we do some re-education. And so we're asking everybody to call their legislators and say, we believe in ethnic studies, vote yes on AB 1460. We are only two steps away from winning this. All we need is a floor vote from the state Senate, which will likely happen. That floor vote will likely happen on Monday, February 24th. Is that the 24th? Yes, February 24th. So you can make calls, send emails, send tweets to your state senator and say vote yes. And then we need a yes signature from the governor. So once Gavin Newsom signs it, it will become law. This is not a new requirement. It will be an overlay so students could take classes like Race in the Constitution instead of U.S. government. They could take classes like Chicano Latino history instead of American history. And so it will really, really help our students. And I think it'll help our state.
Melina, I want to thank you so much for the work that you do and for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
My guest has been Melina Abdullah. She's a professor and chair of the Department of Pan-African Studies at Cal State University in Los Angeles. She's active with the Los Angeles chapter of Black Lives Matter. We've been discussing, in addition to AB 1460, the Los Angeles DA's race that's taking place March 3rd. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.